This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho, featuring inspirational and fascinating personal stories of people from all corners of the globe who are now in St. Louis. We'll take a look at the U.S. through newcomers' eyes, get some insight into world history and cultures, and maybe learn something about ourselves. Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL. Today, my guest is Daniel Tong Pui, and he is from Burma, which is sometimes called Myanmar. And we'll talk a little bit later about the difference between those two words. But Daniel, thank you for coming today.
Thank you for inviting me to
my pleasure
interview with you.
Let's start by explaining where Burma actually is on the map, because some people might not be familiar with it geographically. So what countries is it border?
Okay. Also, Myanmar and Burma. Burma is between India and China, and also neighborhood with the Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
So easily to, you know, go to India, China, and Thailand. But my state, a little bit, you know, closer to the India.
Okay. Yeah, we'll talk more a little bit later about your particular state and your story. But, you know, Burma, like a lot of the people that I interview in this show come from countries who were colonized by other countries for a long time. And, even, you know, they had their own history, but then colonizing powers came in. And in your case, it was Britain. Mm-hmm. And later Japan, actually, in the war. But Britain, the United Kingdom was sort of had control of Burma for many years. Do you see aspects of that today in Burma? Are there is there, for example, the British schooling system or aspects of British culture that you still find today in Burma?
Not really, but a lot of people from Burma, I mean, Burmese people talk about Christianity came from the British.
Well, that's another example.
That's what they mentioned about it.
Yeah.
But no other something like food.
Is it lifestyle? Do you have a culture of drinking tea, which the British do?
We don't really do that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You said that the British brought Christianity, but I believe Burma is predominantly a Buddhist country still today, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And what about it was under Japanese control for a few years during the war. Did that leave some kind of a legacy? Are there some Japanese foods popular now, anything like that?
Not really.
No
population of the Japanese food. Just only people known about the Japanese food after, you know, little changing of the country last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Burma became independent in 1947. And I think a lot of people are familiar with Aung San Suu Kyi. Did I pronounce that name?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Her father, though, Aung San, was sort of, is he called like the father of Burma? Because he was very instrumental in moving toward independence, right?
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about him? His background was, or how?
General Aung San, he's like, I mentioned like example with the United States, something like, you know, George Washington for the United States. Yeah, the father of the country. But Aung San is the general. Aung San is the father of Burma. So he tried, you know, to get the independent from the British.
And he did, but then he was killed, right? Assassinated?
Yes, after that. Yeah, assassinated him and 14 others, yep.
And was this Ne Win that assassinated him in that group, or was it somebody?
No, I think.
Okay.
That time.
But yeah, Ne Win was the leader for a long time, and he was sort of like a military dictator. And do you know, I mean, that was before your time probably, but do you know from your parents or grandparents what life was like in those days for the average person?
Oh, wow.
Was there a lot of repression?
You know, I can definitely talk about here, you know, military role of military is something like forcing to, you know, civilian to do something mm-hmm. without paying money. There's a lot going on before I was born and after I was born.
Yeah.
So that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there was, okay, can you talk about the 8888 protests? Okay. That's so kind of when things really.
I just heard about and then reading about 888 story. And that time I was 9 years old.
Now, 8888 refers to August 8th, 1988.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So August 8th, 1988. So I was 9 years old that time.
Okay.
So that was the, you know, protesting from the college student to the, you know, protesting for the military recruitment. But that's
a student-led protest.
Yes.
And I understand that it had the original, I guess, reason for the protest was that Ne Win and the government had changed the money system. Like he had either devalued the money or he had gotten rid of certain denominations, which made a lot of people kind of lose a lot of their savings, and especially students who were, mm-hmm. is that, am I right?
Yeah, that's what I heard. And then also we have the, our family have a, you know, hard time about the money debt, you know, they just let it, dead money, I mean, like cover 25 jet, we call it jet. Mm-hmm. So 25 jet and 45 jet and 15 jet, something like cover them. Some people stole their money inside their house and, you know, kept that or something like, and don't really go take them to the bank. And even if you put in the bank, only the public bank only pay back that money. If you do like private bank, you're not going to get that money again.
So,
not like American bank. American bank, all the banks like federal, under federal banks. Mm-hmm. But in Burma, you have a public bank and private bank.
Okay. Yeah.
So we lost a couple of 100,000 jet for my parents.
Oh.
So we can't do nothing about that one.
Was this in the 8888?
Yes.
Okay. So it that protest got really big, right? It spread. Yes. And mm-hmm. and a lot of the government kind of pushed it down, and a lot of people were killed and mm-hmm. jailed.
Yeah.
And that is, I think that's how Aung San Suu Kyi became sort of like
leader. A, yeah.
Leader. Can you talk about what her role was in that and how she?
Well, she started leading after AAA because they need a leader. For the student. So she became a leader. She just wanted to visit her mom, but, you know, but start from that one, you know, she
just went to visit her mom.
She didn't go back to London, you know, England, and she just stayed in the country.
Okay, she was visiting from,
yeah.
She was living in England at mm-hmm. the time and happened to be back when this started, and so, mm-hmm. okay, I didn't.
This way are.
Okay, well.
I don't know exactly, but I
read. She's married to a British man.
But not really.
Yeah. So then. She kind of became a leader of the people,
mm-hmm.
and then she wound up going to prison. I think she still is in prison. Yeah, she has been in and out of prison for
20-something years, 25, 20-something years. I
know. Do you know what the charges are, what they're charging her with?
Just home arrest, and then I don't know exactly because... They mention a lot. That's like what they do right now.
Mm-hmm. But she, right now, she is in prison, right? I mean, I think she was in, she was under house arrest for a long time, mm-hmm. but now she's back in prison again?
Yes.
Okay.
2021.
And there's been a lot of pressure on the government to release her, but she even won a Nobel Peace Prize at one mm-hmm. year, but she's still... Do you think she'll ever be released? Do you think she'll ever be able to be an actual political leader?
Yeah, I don't know. See, I don't know about the military, you know, recruitment. They do what they want, so we can't estimate what they do.
So So it's still the military.
Fell down.
Yeah. Military regime is still in power.
It's in power right now.
Okay.
And killing civilians right now.
They still are. Is it any better? Well, is it any better now than it was in the 80s? Is it still?
Probably more worse.
Really?
Right now, civil war in the entire country.
Okay. We're going to talk about how that plays out. One of the things I want to ask you, though, was I don't know, I'm not sure when this happened, but the name of the country changed officially from Burma to Myanmar. And do you know why that happened and what the significance is? And do the two words have different meanings?
My understanding is Burma is something like a group of people from Burma. And Myanmar is like the whole entire group, empty group, and all Burmese people who live in the country. That's what I...
Okay, so Myanmar refers to more people than only ethnic Burmese.
How about more people?
Different nationalities, different minorities. Okay. So do people like this new name, Myanmar? Or do... I mean, I don't know why, but I still call it Burma. But is Myanmar more appropriate, or is it more popular with the people now in Burma?
Or, you know, we call it Burma for a while.
Yeah,
and then, you know, too many centuries and people knowing about Burma.
Yeah.
So even when I say Myanmar, I'd put Burma behind the Myanmar because they probably don't know about Myanmar.
Hmm.
So it's been changed in 2011 or something.
Is that when it was changed?
Yeah.
Okay. And what do you call it? You call it kind of both?
Yeah. We call it Myanmar, but some people didn't know about Myanmar because they never studied in the history about Myanmar, but they were studying Burma. So
yeah,
I have to put both.
Okay. Now, we mentioned that Burma is predominantly a Buddhist country, but I guess you call them ethnic Burmese people, that's the majority, but there are other minority groups or different ethnicities like Karen and Chin, and, you know, we have in St. Louis now, we have refugees that came from Burma that are mostly... At least the ones that I met have been mostly Chin or Karen ethnicities. And I believe you're Chin. So can you talk about how the Chin people were discriminated against maybe by the government and why people had to leave as refugees?
So mostly probably with Chin people had the government... Probably with government between, you know, the region and the nation, I mean, anti-group because of Chin. So since after independence, you know, the government from Burma's like military regime, they usually don't really promote to the any other anti-group. That's what I mean. Like, if someone else... qualified for the general, for the, you know, military, but they do not put him for the general or military because of the ethnic group, nationality. And they also fight with religion a lot. They don't want to let Burmese people go to the, you know, became a Christian or something like that. So, yeah, kind of a little confusing between, you know.
Most of the Chin people are Christian, I think you said?
Yes.
And is that from the British?
99%.
And you said Chin is on the border with India, that Chin state?
Yes, India, yep.
Okay. Are they Christians because of the British influence, or were there other missionaries that came later?
British influence, because of British and then Italian.
Italian.
Came from Italian and the Catholic, you know, church became the, a lot of places in China too.
And does the government discriminate against Chin people because of their religion or because of their ethnicity or both?
Yeah, both of them.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And Korean either. But Korean have Buddhist and Christian, maybe half-half.
Okay. Are there other parts of the country that are that you'd find a lot of Christians also, or is it mostly just in Chin State?
Oh, mostly in Chin State. Chin State and Kachin.
Chin, and then Kachin is a different group?
Oh, the Kachin is the north side of the in Burma.
Okay. And then the Karen, we'll talk about the Karen a little bit later, but where is the Karen population located in the country?
Well, Karen is the, they are in the north side, right across from the Thailand.
Okay. And they're predominantly Buddhist, but they also are discriminated against from the government because they're an ethnic minority.
Mm-hmm. And because of the, no freedom.
And I suppose they have other languages, their own languages, Karen and Chin. Mm-hmm. And are people in these states forced to speak Burmese, or can they speak their own language, like in school or in business?
Usually when they speak with some other people, different ethnic group, they speak Burmese. So Burmese is like common language for Burma.
But you're free to speak Chin with your family or in your...
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. We need to take our first short break here, but we'll be back and pick up the story in a minute. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL. Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Arnell's Hardwoods. For all of your laminate and hardwood flooring needs, call them at 314-397-3252.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by the Indoor Comfort Team. For all of your heating and cooling needs, call the Indoor Comfort Team at 314-230-9542.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
All right, welcome back. We're talking with Daniel Tong Pui from Burma/Myanmar. And we were talking about the various ethnic minorities in Burma, Myanmar, such as Chin or Karen. And since you came from Chin State and that's your background, let's talk about that and your life. So can you talk about your childhood in the Chin State? What kind of school did you go to? What did kids do for fun there? What was life like in your community? Was it a village that you lived in, a town, a city?
So I was born and raised from Burma, Chin State. And that was an academia inside the city. So, Kalimu, my town is Chutong.
Okay.
So I born and raised from my village, and all the time I went to the public school. We do have private school for the high school, but it's expensive.
Mm.
And doesn't make it qualify for the examination. Even if you go to the private school, we have to take the examination to the public school.
Mm.
That's what it is in Burma at that time. Mm-hmm. And then I love being school. And then I love playing soccer,
okay,
volleyball, and then table tennis. Mm. Mm-hmm. And then I also play one of the most population in my high school is, riding bike, mm-hmm, speeding. I mean,
oh, like
20 miles. 15, 20 miles.
Wow. You still do that here?
School. Not really. Oh. But I do have a bike sometimes, but sometimes I ride my bike.
Okay.
And school's like a lot of students, mostly, especially in high school. We have 9th grade and 10th grade, not the 11 or 12 or something like that. But we have high school only 2 years. So the high school, we only have like 100 students in the room.
Really?
115, 105
classroom?
One class.
One teacher?
One teacher. But they have different teacher for a different subject. Uh-huh. But at a time, one teacher at a time.
What was the discipline like? Did the student listen to the teacher and, you know, behave, or were there discipline problems with students?
Yeah, we had a lot of problems.
Really?
Yeah, because not enough teacher to control the, you know, plenty of students at a time.
Was there a lot of homework?
Yes, we do.
And did you study English there?
Yes, I did. Okay.
Was it required to learn English?
Yes, we start English parts in kindergarten, like ABC alphabet. Mm-hmm. And then we do have some meaning, you know, start from first grade.
Uh-huh.
We have start the English and the all the history and science, math and Burmese language later.
Did the teacher speak Burmese or Chin?
Mostly my place, like Chin, but they have to speak Burmese in the classroom.
Oh, okay. Were there churches in your community? Were people free to go to church, or did the government try to stop that?
Oh, we're free to go to church. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if we go by ourselves, and it's completely okay. But if we call someone else from Buddhist, and I mean, you know, invite them to the church or something, sometimes have trouble.
They think you're trying to change their religion.
Don't want to let us mess up. But there's a lot going on right now.
Okay. Were there also Buddhist people in your village, or were you all basically all Christian?
Yeah, we have a Buddhist one group of the Buddhists at our village, maybe 50 houses.
And were there any problems between the communities?
Sometimes it does. Really? I mean, when we have, you know, like using big loud, or we call it a loudspeaker, mm-hmm. something like, you know, take microphone and, you know, like doing something like that, big loud for the whole entire village. They've been complaining about that one. But when they do big loud and we complain, but they don't care. Mm-hmm. They don't have government.
Yeah,
something happened.
What kind of work did your father do?
Oh, my father, my parents, they were farmers before I was born.
Farmers.
And my dad almost passed away for twice from the farm, and they took him to the hospital for twice. After that, my father was, you know, changed his mind. And don't want to go back to the farm anymore, mm-hmm. and try to do some, you know, family restaurant.
Family restaurant.
My parents started before I was born.
Okay.
So 87, 88, probably they start, you know, having restaurant, not at home, but they take it to the little population place.
Oh.
From home, we make the noodle from home, fresh noodle. Rice and rope, we make it, and then took it to the market and sell it. And we've been grew up with that one.
Mm. Did you help as a kid?
So when I was 4 years old, 5 years old, I can start helping my parents.
5 years
cutting
old?
Chive,
really?
And cilantro or something like that, uh-huh. and peelings and onions and garlic. And, you know, we waters. We don't have a pipe water, so we have the something ridiculous for it.
A well?
It's like a 50 feet go down. I mean, like, where we have to, you know, put the roof
in. Yeah. But, well.
Yeah, whatever we have. So that's what I started helping with my parents. Mm. So my restaurant experience is my whole entire life.
Wow. Sounds like it.
So, I mean, using knife and something like at the restaurant, mm-hmm. a lot more in me. More professional than some other chef. I mean,
yeah.
That's what my professional.
You should open up a Burmese restaurant in St. Louis.
Yes, I was trying to 2020 before pandemic start. Mm-hmm. So I quit my job on 2029. December 31st, my last day. So I was thinking about trying to open a Burmese restaurant or something like, you know, small restaurant, start with a small restaurant. Mm-hmm. But pandemic started, so I had to stop.
Well.
And
do you think you might
do it again right now?
Okay.
So I still thinking about.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But sometimes I'm a little lazy to do something. That restaurant is good.
It's a lot of work.
You have a lot of responsibility for doing a restaurant.
Yeah.
Because I've been open restaurant in Malaysia for like 3 years.
Yeah.
So I know what it is.
Oh.
So you have a lot of paying attention for what business.
Yeah.
At least 1 year.
Yeah. It's a big step. When you were going to school in Chin State, Burma, what was your image of the United States? What was your image of America? Did you think you would ever come here? Did you want to come here, or what did you think of it?
Okay, this is a good question. So after I finished my high school, I went to college. I mean, college means in Burma, since 8888,
yeah,
they had difficulty to go to the college because of they didn't open every year.
Oh,
and then even if you finish high school, you wait for college. We call it distance. Something like distance means something like just study and go for the examination, something like that. You know, study ahead and not only to go to class, study from home and go to the examination when the time comes. But that was also have hard time. I mean, some people wait for the college from Burma education. I mean, they have to wait for probably 25 years, 26 years old, you will graduate. Bachelor degree.
Mm.
So, and then the education is, our standard is not that good enough. I mean, that the public college, and they don't really stake on the, what they did from the school, the teacher, you know, profession. Mm. So, most of Chin and Kachin, that's what I know, they went to the seminary school.
Seminary
school? Yeah, Bible college.
Oh.
That's what we do. And one college, seminary school, is a lot better than public school for the language, especially English language. Hmm. So mostly graduate the religion degree, bachelor degree, master degree. And that most of the people who went to the seminary school, especially Chin.
Did you think about coming to the United States?
Oh, yes. When I was in college, I was applied for the DV every year.
Diversity visa.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Okay.
So I apply most of every year. And,
can you explain that for people that might not be familiar with it? What is the DV? Diversity visa.
That one, they only give for 50 per year or something like they have limitation for the accepting, giving a visa. So not everybody, but you can apply every year. But one day you can win for the visa. They can allow you to go to the United States. That's what my professor did. The family, they moved to the United States.
Okay. They won the visa. Yeah, this is a special kind of immigration program. It's not a refugee. I guess it's technically an immigrant, but most countries get a certain number of slots per year, as you said. 50, maybe you said in your...
Yeah.
Not many.
So 50.
Every country gets just a handful, and if their name... It's like a lottery. If their name comes up, they can come to the United States after vetting and background checks. But they are expected to become self-sufficient. They don't get any help from the government. They have to make their own way when they come here, right?
Yes,
they don't get any help like refugees.
You have to spend all the money. I mean, like, air ticket and visa fee, everything.
You're all on your own.
Spend your money.
Yeah, you get a work permit, but you're on your own. Yeah. But you applied for that but did not get it?
Never got it.
Okay. But you wanted to come here.
Yes, I ever talk about when I was young to my parents, sort of what my feet will step on the United States one day.
That was your goal?
That's my goal.
Wow. Was it because of discrimination from the government, or was it because you just wanted to come here for a different...
I'm thinking about to come here before, but when I was in Malaysia, they have the refugee, and then we have registered by the UNHCR. But government from Malaysia, they can arrest us anytime they want.
Okay. How did we get to Malaysia? You skipped that part. How did that happen? Did you leave the country
I will answer that later. I'll go, from Malaysia, I talked to the UNHCR officer. You can send me any country, any place you want. I don't want to stay here. I just want to get out from the country, from the militia, as soon as possible. So they sent me to the United States. I didn't choose the United States, but they sent me to the United States. Well, before I came to the United States, I was in Burma.
Yeah.
So I came out from Burma in 2009 in March, first week March, probably. And then I was sick, and then I ran out from Burma in Rangoon, and then fled to the Korean state.
You were basically trying to leave the country because of discrimination?
Yes. Okay. And I had a problem with the government.
Did you go with your family, your parents?
No.
By yourself?
By myself. Oh. So I have a problem with the government. So I didn't take any, you know, clock and any shoes, that much stuff. I have only one pair of shoes and ran out from there. Mm-hmm. And then I was sick at the court town when I got cut down. I was sick for like 2 weeks. Malaria and we call it typhoid. That was almost made me pass away. Because I went to the doctor, and the doctor don't treat me well because she gave me, she said, you can eat egg and something like, you know, lemon juice or something like that. That was opposite with my symptom. Mm. It mean, you know, you don't really treat the right way.
This was still in Burma or was it?
Yeah, it's in Burma, yeah, in Koh Tao. And then I have another man from Chinsei. He's he retired from the army, mm-hmm. and then he know about the medicine, so he treat me. So I get him better. So I can step up to Thailand. I was in Thailand for a couple of days, and it's a hard time to get to Malaysia.
Why Malaysia? Was there a refugee camp there you were trying to get to?
Yes, they have more refugee camp. And Malaysia, one good thing in Malaysia is like sometimes you can have some part-time job and you can support your parent. In Thailand, they can't do any job. I mean, you have to stay in the camp and just have what they give to you. But Malaysia, you can also have some, you know, part-time job, and you can earn some money, and you can provide, you know, yourself, and you can also provide your parent to send back some money to the parent. What you waiting for a refugee? I mean, registration.
So how did you get to Malaysia then? Did you like on a boat?
Do
you have to buy a ticket, or did you like?
No, we have a agent that, yeah. They took me to go down to the Maesai something. I'm at inside the Thailand border. That one we ride a boat. They cover from the top, and we pass the we cross the river and pass Burma, and we went to the Thailand, and we stay in the one, you know, like wilderness, something like that. We stay down there, a lot of people from Burma and wound people and car accident. They got broken elbow and broken,
okay.
You know, bone. And they have no way to go to the hospital because they're not legal.
So they cry. Oh, I have to stop you there. We need to take another short break, but we'll be right back. And
all right.
What's up? You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL. Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Samim Afghan Restaurant, featuring traditional Afghan cuisine and conveniently located on Manchester Road in the Grove.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you by Hacking Law, for individuals who want to come and stay in the U.S. Hacking Law fights for immigrants every day. Visit them at hackingimmigrationlaw.com.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Okay, welcome back to Stories of New Americans. Daniel, you were talking about arriving in Malaysia, and then you were you in a camp or were you not in a camp? Because I think you said you worked in a restaurant there.
Yeah, I'm not a camp, and there is not really population about refugee in Malaysia, and I just lead on to the registering. I mean, I can get registered by UNHCR right away because I have to go to the community leader. They have the something like paper to show to the law enforcement from Malaysia to look at that. I apply registration to UNHCR, but still waiting for my turn to get to the office to get my registration paper. So until I got that one, I had to pull my community letter from community that can show it to law enforcement from Malaysia.
And they let you live anywhere? Like if you had the money, you could live anywhere you wanted there, I guess? Or did you have to stay in a particular...
No, we can live wherever we want, but we're not freedom. Wherever we go, we can get arrested.
All right.
Yeah.
Did you speak Malay at the time?
No, I do. I do not. See, but I studied from Burma before I went to the... on the way, I went to the Malaysia, and then I didn't want to go outside from home for 6 months. I didn't go anywhere.
Did you have anybody that was there with you? Did you
have my sister and husband with me? Oh. They've been there before me, and then, yeah.
So you stayed with them. Mm-hmm. Were there any Malaysian people that kind of helped you or became friends or not?
Not in the first time, but my sister and husband, their boss became my boss anyway too. So they waiting me for, you know, me to work together with the same boss. And the boss really nice. And he really protect us if we get harmed by someone else. I mean, like my sister and husband have a problem with the robbery from the market or something like that. And my boss said, we have to wait from down there for like 24 hours, whatever it takes. If you recognize a person who robbed you. I mean, like, he always, you know, protect us instead of, I mean, like, not like, I mean, 100% boss, but he's a, like, boss and a, like, heart of family.
Uh-huh.
So it's one of the things that wherever I went, wherever I will be, I mean, I have a good friend. I have a good, I mean...
He was a Malaysian
friend,
guy, right?
Yeah, good friend, and who can, you know, lead me or support me.
That's great.
So even in St. Louis, first time I had a problem. I mean,
yeah.
No friend. But Peter told me he also support me to find a job.
Okay.
And when I wanted to buy a car, he also, you know.
I remember him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Amazing.
How long did you stay in Malaysia then?
It's been 6 years.
6 years. And then how long did you work at that restaurant? Or you had a? Did you say you opened your own restaurant there?
So I'm working with my previous boss for a while, and have a new boss in the same building. And my boss went to the KL Kuala Lumpur, and I stayed down there. And Malaysia, they have a new prime minister, so they have changing some policy and law, and they don't want to let people stay in the country for without legal documentation. So my sister and husband went home. I still stayed in Malaysia.
Oh,
but I mean, I can't do anything. I mean, so just hiding somewhere's apartment for a couple months.
Would they deport you if they found you?
Yes, something. If they found us, they're going to arrest us, put in jail, and they're going to send back to Burma or someone's like, you know, send to the border of Malaysia and Thailand.
Okay.
That's what they do.
Just send you to the border.
Yeah,
and then you
at least send us to the border.
Yeah, okay.
And, yeah,
and then how was it that you came to the United States? Then did you have to go to a American embassy or something?
No, I do not need to go to American embassy. I got my UNHCR registration in 2007. I'm sorry, 2007 September 28, I think, if I'm not wrong. And I've been staying in the country for like a year and a half, something like that. And after a year and a half of my registration, you know, I moved from Malaysia. I used to be here on 2008, but I can't because I have a high blood pressure. and they don't want me to go right away. So, yeah, I've been late for like more than half a year to get signals.
Okay, so you mentioned UNHCR registration. So you had qualified as a refugee to come here.
Yes.
Okay. And then you finally came in 2009. Did you speak English at that time?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. And then did you come directly to St. Louis or another city?
Yeah, they sent me to St. Louis.
Was that just by chance? Was it your choice? Or
no, I didn't. I didn't choose any place to go. But oh. Just I talked to officer from Tunisia. Send me wherever you want. Which country you want me to send? That's why. I mean,
did you come here by yourself?
Yeah, by myself.
And did you come through the International Institute or Catholic Charities?
No, Catholic Charities.
Catholic Charities. Okay. What were those early days like here when you first arrived? Was it?
Yes.
Was it?
Yes, a few people.
Well, yeah, culture shock. What were your first impressions of life here? Must have been really difficult.
Oh, that time it's hard to find a job. Mm-hmm. That was a new transition between, Prussian Bush and President Obama.
Oh.
And then that time it's really hard to find a job, even a part-time job. That was some kind of depressing.
Oh. Did you, you mentioned Peter. So he was a Burmese man that had been here for a while. So he helped you, were there other Burmese people that helped you out?
Peter told me a lot because all the Burmese people arrived here for like a couple of months before me.
Oh.
Not really, you can ask.
They could help you.
Either. Nobody helped, their personal car.
Yeah.
Hospital transportation, we ride here, bus, something like that. I saw one person have a car. And he had busy guy. He worked at an institute, and he have another business, so he never had a chance to help
me. Yeah. But you found each other, and you emotionally supported each other in those first
years,
right? Mm-hmm. And did you, I mentioned that I met people here from many different backgrounds, from Burma, Chin, Karen, Suchin. Did you all get together here and help each other, or did you mostly focus with other Chin people?
Yeah, we did a lot before.
Okay.
Last 10 years ago, we've been, fall back. Because of the American lifestyle, we have a new generation in the United States, so we need to hard working. We have nothing. We just start from zero.
Yeah.
So we need a house. We need a car,
yeah,
to work. So we need everything.
No time for fun. Just
so
work.
If you have children and you want to send them to school, or like private school, you have to pay more money. Yeah. So we need to deal for our family. Yeah. So we don't have that much time for the community right now. But we must need for later on. If we're getting old after 50 years or 60 years, you're gonna love to deal with your community. Yeah. That's what I think about. But 2013, the last time that we have the unity in St. Louis, because we have the, the Festival of Nation, mm-hmm. Hosted by the International Institute St. Louis. We have one that the travel part every year, every August, end of the August.
Mm-hmm.
So since 2013, the last time that we have, in 2014, we stole all the equipment and the kitchen stuff, civil war stuff, one of the garage in my friend's house. Someone break the garage and took all of them. Oh. So we stopped doing that one. When we stopped doing that one, community, unity is like,
really?
Automatically, split.
That was what helped.
Far away to get to each other again.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Are there problems here between these various ethnic groups from Burma here in St. Louis?
Not really. We don't have any problem right now. But as I said earlier, because we have to deal with the family, the first generation.
What
my kids, when they grew up, they might be a lot more easier than what we're facing right now.
Yeah.
This is true. So that's what I'm thinking about.
This is true with every immigrant group. What were some of the big cultural differences you noticed in your first days here? What was really shocking or strange for you here? Maybe cold weather for one thing.
Water is not a problem for me because I live in a cold place before, so it's like 40 degree Fahrenheit in my
village. Really?
It's not too bad for me. But when you go down to like minus something degree Fahrenheit, a little cool for me. But one good thing in the United States, they have a heater, so I don't need to worry about how cold it is.
Yeah. Were there other cultural differences you noticed with the way life is here, the way people are? Thing that was really hard for you at first?
My first time is like, I would say, I speak English, but I do not speak like the way I say right now. I mean, I was speaking like British English.
Oh.
And the problem is I was in Malaysia for a while and I speak what they say, what they speak. They are broken English and they just talk about like just a meeting. They didn't even use the past perfect and last question. So that's the problem. I have a biggest problem, but not other thing okay. that I have.
Did you come, you said you came here alone?
Yeah.
And were you living with a roommate at first?
Yes, I have a roommate.
Okay. Okay.
So like 40 days with that two of my roommate. So that was a little bit pressure for me because, you know, fighting.
Really? Drinking all day. Oh, boy. Did you know them before?
I never knew them.
Catholic before. Charities put you together?
Yeah, they put me together. And I've been so upset with that one, but after I moved, it was April 9th, so I moved to another apartment with other roommate in August something.
Yeah.
So it was amazing.
It was better?
A lot better.
What was your first job, Daniel?
Oh, my first job at the restaurant, Sapphire Pan Asian at the Central Wilson.
Oh.
So McPherson and the Euclid, not UK. So that was the first time that I had the job that I got. Saying it was just, you know, helping by Peter Talmul. Mm-hmm. And after 4 months, but the leasing is expired.
Uh-oh.
And the owner won double cost for the rent. Mm-hmm. So my boss said, no, sorry, we closed the restaurant. I have no job again.
Oh, boy.
So I do start cleaning a job for my part-time job, cleaning the police station, something like, you know, Channel 2, office, something like restaurant cleaning for like a couple months for my side job.
Yeah.
And then apply for other job. So that was in the Sierra Queen. Okay. And that time my late relative and a friend who live in Washington, D.C., D.C. area, they called me for a while. I mean, they said, you don't need to pay for rent. Stay with us. But when you get a job, you can find an apartment and you can stay with us. That's why you got paid, you know, rent and something like that. They called me all the time, but
you decided to stay.
I didn't move because I was thinking about God put me to this place, so I don't want to go anywhere. But I was trying to move again in 2013 and went to the California, Florida, and somewhere another place. But I won't move it. I don't want to move because living costs a relationship.
Yeah.
So, example, tomatoes, one pound of Roma tomatoes in St. Louis.
Yeah.
78 cents. If you go to D.C., 1 pound of Roma tomatoes, $3.80. Oh, my God. The same salary that you get.
Yeah. Yeah.
Better don't move from St. Louis.
Did you ever feel any discrimination here as an Asian man or as a foreigner or a refugee or anything?
So according to my experience, in 2011, I was sent to my friend who lived in St. Louis. He wanted to move to Texas, Amarillo, Texas.
Yeah.
And we went back. We went down there with my friend for another friend. Drop him off. When we came back from the Amarillo, Texas, heading back to home, St. Louis, we got pulled over from the, you know, policeman, state trooper. And then the one that I don't really feel not okay about, he didn't pull me out simply. I mean, he tried to come to my left lane and take a look at my face. Mm-hmm. After he's seeing my face, and he going back to the behind my vehicle and pull me out. Mm. And that was feel like something like racial. I mean, something like I mean, I'm not, you know, white people because of the pull me out, something like that. He can pull me out before he what, you know, look at my face. Mm-hmm. That's one time. But second time, the 2015, with my pastor, and we went to try to go to Chicago, and the one from St. Clair County, Collins Field, Illinois side. And one of the cops, he, the same as I said earlier, he watching my face, look at my face, and go back to my behind my vehicle, pull me up. Mm-hmm. And I talked to my pastor, do you think it's a racial? I think if I'm a white people, do you think if they pull me out, that might be racial. I mean, like some places not, but a lot of places been okay. I mean, but some places still have something racial in America, yeah. Every other place. But
it might not have necessarily been there.
Yeah, but still, I guess I still better than Burma.
What is the final question? What's the best thing about living in America?
Oh, living in America is something like freedom. I mean, freedom is the most important for us. And then you can do whatever you do. I mean, like, in Burma, if you want to be a teacher, you need to apply and study before 25 of your age. Something like they have a rule and regulation, something like a law, but the rest of you don't, they don't have it. You can study anytime you want.
Okay.
And then if you have money, if you have something financial, you can do whatever you want. I mean, like open a restaurant, something like example. I mean, like, you know, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So nobody gonna mess up with them. I mean, okay. That's how with your business. And one good thing, that one. And the education is a lot better than Burma, especially for my children.
Yeah.
So they grew up, if they grew up from the United States, then that would be a great way to, you know, grow for the children.
Well, I hope you will open a restaurant here. I'll be your first customer, I promise, if you do that. I think we're about out of time, unfortunately. But, Daniel, thank you for sitting down and talking with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us to your interview.
Thank you. All right. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL 101.9, 94.1.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL. Boom.